on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of February 8th, 2015. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, and we have an absolutely wonderful episode planned for this week. We're going to be talking about memory. We're going to be talking about interop. We're going to be talking about security and so much more. We're glad you could join us. And if you are not here live, well, you're missing a great opportunity to be part of not just a wonderful radio show, but a great community. Speaking of community, I want to remind everyone that the live face-to-face portion of the community is interop. Interop, connecting the IT community, will be coming to you live in Las Vegas, Nevada, from April 27th through May 1st, 2015. Of course, Interop is happening at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Convention Center. We would love to have you there. For more information and to register, please go to www.interop.com. Well, now let's take a quick look. The week in 60, this was a great week as we found out that the market for smartwatches is small and getting smaller for Android as the Apple Watch looms. Turns out people don't want to have an entire wardrobe of smartwatches. One should be enough. And right now, people are looking at an Apple on their wrist. Next, cloud wide area networks are getting bigger. Everything else is cloudy. Why not the WAN? This gives us an opportunity for IT professionals to be confused about the terms and technologies behind two acronyms at once. VMware Virtual Volumes launch a new storage area. We have virtual everything else. Why not storage, you might ask? Well, VMware has decided that they're going to answer that question by making virtual storage available to far more people. When you put virtual storage with your virtual server, accessed by your virtual network, well, it's entirely possible that you can staff it with people who don't exist at all, making this the CFO's dream environment. And finally, we find that if you can't use a product after you steal it, fewer people will steal it. In word that will be surprising to approximately no one, we learn that the kill switch has been effective at shutting down much of the theft of iPhones that was going on. The next thing you know, we'll be told that if you take the keys out of your car, they're much more likely to stay in your driveway when you park them. For these and more surprising stories, go to www.informationweek.com, and that's your week in 60. Well, we're going to move on with the show now. We're going to be talking about in-memory computing, one of those topics that comes up every time you get a bunch of large enterprise business intelligence folks in a room together. And for that, we have our own expert on large enterprise software, Information Week Editor-at-Large, Doug Henschen. Doug, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thank you, Kurt. Good to be here again.
Well, now, I've been hearing about in-memory computing for a long time, but you did a much more comprehensive look at in-memory computing earlier this week. What spurred you to do that?
Well, I was on the show last week talking about SAP's new S4 HANA release, which is so-called simplified cloud-based applications that run in memory on SAP's HANA in-memory database, which they've been talking about a lot for 5 years. They've sort of become the in-memory poster child. But in fact, in-memory databases, as you mentioned, have been around a long time. In the mid-90s, a couple of still existing products, SolidDB and Times 10, were invented. And those are sort of embedded databases that go into larger applications. And in their case, it was for very rarefied applications in telecommunications and sort of a switching role in financial services and in e-commerce. So they've been around for a long time, but they've been in very specialized applications. Now they're sort of going mainstream.
Well, going mainstream, now tell me a little bit about what makes up a mainstream in-memory computing customer. Are we still talking about nothing but the very largest enterprises, or does all of the new movement mean that some smaller enterprises are now able to look at in-memory computing?
Well, it's not so much the size of the enterprise, but the need for the particular application. So there are still lots of niche roles, and it's not necessarily how big the company is, but if they have a need for a very low latency application where they're doing something in near real time, the in-memory database is the kind of engine you need, because you're not waiting for the time it takes to write data to a hard disk drive and then pull it back again in a query or a transactional situation. RAM is right there next to the processor, and it's much faster than disk, so you get much lower latency. So today, in sort of a big data and sort of a real-time context, you're seeing telcos, long-time users of this technology, but now they're want to do a lot more in the way of, say, detecting problems on a mobile network, or spotting possible churn of a telco customer, or seeing where they have a antenna outage because a lot of calls are dropping. In retail, you have these recommendation engines where you can, you like this product, you should check out this product. If you're buying this one, here are the complementary products. In advertising, all sorts of ad networks on the internet where they're inserting ads in real time based on what you've just been browsing, and that's very common today. And in mobile applications, you can serve up offers based not only on what you're browsing on the phone, what kind of interactions you've been having on your phone, but also your geolocation. So these are just a few of the very latest sort of streaming low latency applications that are emerging.
Well, when you look at what companies are able to do with in-memory computing, do you think that what we're going to see now are people taking the time to really develop the applications around the technology, or are there more developments in the underlying technology itself that we should be looking for in the next few months?
Well, yeah, you'll see a mix of tackling new problems. The ones I just described might involve big data or streaming, real-time streaming on internet, or mobile applications that are entirely new. SAP and its partners, sort of co-opetition partners, are going and trying to tackle some old problems. So SAP is trying to make a better enterprise app. They're also using HANA for startups and other applications, but primarily they're serving the SAP audience first and trying to make those enterprise apps much more performant. SAP's enterprise apps have long run on third-party databases like IBM DB2, Microsoft SQL Server, Oracle, and all of those vendors have added in-memory options to their legacy databases, whereby you don't have to change the software, but you can take certain tables of information, put that in memory on these options, and make that feature, if it was subject to sort of I/O delays, make that aspect of the application run faster. Now, that doesn't change the underlying database. It's still a legacy database. You're not changing the application. You're not really entering into this in-memory paradigm, but you are solving problems where apps didn't really perform well because they were just very data intensive and took a long time.
Well, you know, one of the things you mentioned is that we've been hearing about in-memory computing from SAP for a long time. They've been beating the HANA drum for a while.
Yeah, 5 years
or so. Are the other companies, You know, have they been talking about in-memory computing just as long, perhaps not as loudly, or are the rest, you know, somewhat newer entrants into the in-memory fold?
Well, it varies. Oracle actually bought Times 10, one of those original mid-90s, actually it was developed at HP. Oracle bought that in 2005, and they really didn't, they treated it like a niche product for a long time, serving in the roles I originally described for in-memory, very niche-y telco and financial and e-commerce. They weren't trying to make it a mainstream product. But as the pressure mounted, as SAP started talking more and more about in-memory, they put that database and they added it to one of their engineered systems called Exalytics to sort of advance analytic applications. So they kind of adapted it. I think, you know, SAP has done a good job of letting the world know that this technology's time has come because of Moore's Law, the reduction in the cost of processing power, the reduction in cost of storage. So you're now seeing lots of vendors emerge that are really championing this message of real-time speed, real-time performance, meeting expectations of today's consumers. So some of the newer players, the Aerospikes, the DataStax, MemSQL, VaultDB, these are relatively recent new database companies that you know, in the last 5 years have emerged leading with in-memory technology stories.
Well, I think one of the things that many of us who watch the industry would love to know, you know, in many respects, database is one of those things where, much like the networking core stack, once you have an incumbent, it's tough to really move someone out of the enterprise, barring some sort of catastrophic failure. With the improvements in performance and capabilities that in-memory brings, do you think that there's a real opportunity to shake things up in some of these large, you know, customer companies about which database they have sitting under some of their major applications?
Well, that's been really an interesting story over the last 10 years. Really, in the mid 2000s, you saw this emergence of a lot of database appliances, companies like Netezza and Greenplum, you know, and Parexel and some others that brought in these appliances because big data was getting out of hand and the legacy databases were kind of expensive and weren't scaling well. So really the theme over the last 10 years where the beginning of that decade of the 2000s, we had Oracle, we had IBM DB2, we had Microsoft SQL Server, and just a few others, Teradata in the analytical niche, Sybase, IQ was another. But the three big players were really dominating the market. That's really been disrupted over the last 10 years, and NoSQL and in-memory have only contributed to a much more dynamic database market.
Outstanding. Well, you had this great slideshow that I'm going to recommend after the show. Everyone go and look at this. You'll really get a much better idea of what's going on. But Doug, now I understand that in the coming week you're going to be looking at things that have nothing to do with computers whatsoever. But in the weeks to come, do you already have an idea of some of the stories you think you're going to be taking a look at?
Well, there's going to be a lot of big data news next week. I'm going to be on a mountain in Colorado, hopefully enjoying skiing, but I'll definitely be following up on a lot of that big data news and kind of getting to the real news behind all the announcements. Big data is really buzzy. There's a lot of chaff in there, and I'll be finding the gems in there, I hope, when I get back.
Outstanding. And Doug, tell us how we can find all the stuff that you're doing. We know that we can look for your byline on informationweek.com, but where do we find you on the Tweety pipes and all the other social media things that people need to follow?
It's at D. Henshin on Twitter and Doug Henshin on LinkedIn, and that's about the size of it for me on the social front.
Well, that's plenty with all that you do here at Information Week. Doug, we hope that you have a great time on the slopes and look forward to talking with you again in a couple of weeks when you're back all tanned and rested from your vacation.
All right. Thanks, Kurt.
That was Doug Hinchin, editor-at-large here at Information Week. For all of your information needs around enterprise software, be sure to look for Doug's byline here at Information Week. He does a great job of keeping an eye on all of that. Well, speaking of keeping an eye on things, next we're going to have the person who keeps her eye on everything here at Information Week, Susan Nunziata, who is editorial director here at Information Week. Susan, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hello, Kurt. Great to be here. And I wanted to ask Doug why he's leaving the Northeast in search of snow, but you let him off the hook. I think that was the most important question of the week.
I strongly suspect that he's run some deep algorithmic process on his own personal in-memory computer farm and come up with some very real reasons for doing that. But I have trouble understanding why anyone looks for snow anywhere, but that's just me. I'm down here in the swamp. Well, Susan, now, most of our listeners don't know, but this last week we had a big meeting of everyone, but pretty much everyone associated with Information Week, where we talked about all of the things that we're going to be doing to bring great information to people over the coming months. What's going on with Information Week and the community here at Information Week? Because, you know, really, I think that's the biggest thing, that we truly are all about the community here at Information Week.
Well, I'm excited to provide a bit of a sneak peek that we are working on some design elements. I don't even want to guess at a time frame, but many of the things that we talked about this week involve making it more friendly for our community to actually engage with the site. And so if all of these things come to pass, I think everyone here will be quite pleased at how the functionality will change going forward. And in the meanwhile, I think we are always encouraging folks to participate not only online, but to also think about joining us at events when you can. We're thinking about trying to create, sort of gatherings and get-togethers within Interop, for example, with some of the members of our community, and we're looking forward to trying other places where we can spend some face time with you guys online and offline.
Yeah, I think that's a really exciting part of all this, the idea that the folks who listen to us, who read our words, we can get together with them in real human space and continue the conversation that way. You brought up something interesting, though. When you talked about the design, I find it truly amazing that in the time that I know I've been doing work online, some designs that originally were thought to be just state of the art in ease of access and ease of interaction now are seen as absolute stumbling blocks to comprehension and participation. Is that something that you found to be true?
Yes, and I think it just shows the pace of change when it comes to how we participate in and communicate. You've got, you know, really great sites that are raising the bar, including what did you call it? The Twitter,
the Tweety pipes or whatever
Tweety
those things.
Yes. You know, you've got the Tweety pipes and all these other outlets that are just changing the way people interact and engage, and so you know, there's just a pace of change that is so rapid and so important for us to keep up with, and that's what we're aiming to do. So we continue to provide the same great content and new ideas for presenting that content. I think the main thing is we want to make it more fun for people to engage with what we're doing.
Well, Susan, one of the things that gets us to more fun, I know, are the topics. And are you seeing from your vantage point any kinds of trends in the sort of information that the community tells us they want to hear about? What are people in IT really curious about these days?
Well, I think it's a lot of things, but the bottom line that we're seeing is folks really love to talk about careers and things that are going to influence their job prospects. So we have a slideshow up this week about 10 hot cities for IT jobs, and folks are really talking about that, including one person from Seattle who's really disappointed that Seattle did not make the cut, the final cut on our list. So I think, you know, those are some things that really excite people. And, of course, all of us are, to a certain degree, aficionados of tech and fans of cool tech. And so this week the community really kind of hit upon three topics that are sort of fan-related. One is the Apple Watch. We have a great slideshow from Tom Claiborne about 11 sweet gadgets that he'd rather buy instead of an Apple Watch. And there's some really fun ideas in there for stuff that you might want to spend your money on instead. And that has really kind of sparked the community to talk about how disinterested they are in Apple Watch. And given some of the comments today, I think, you know, Swatch and Skagen and some other watchmakers might want to pay attention to our community, because it seems like they have a lot of fans there. The other thing that we're fans of are cool cars. And so the post that we have on smart cars being vulnerable to security hacks really got a lot of interest from folks. I know I personally, if winning the lottery after donating a significant portion of the winnings, would probably buy myself a Tesla. And so I think smart cars are, you know, an exciting area for us, and it's been really interesting to see how folks are responding when they consider the way IT will affect the cars of the future. And then Ubuntu smartphones, you know, a little player coming out in a big game, and what that's going to mean for folks, and whether we need these low-priced smartphones and who's actually going to buy them. That was a big subject of debate within the community this week. So those are all things that are of interest to us, either because of our jobs or just because of our sheer devotion to all things tech.
You know, I find it interesting. You mentioned the Ubuntu, and that's one of the operating systems that isn't a huge player in the server farms of the world. It doesn't have the big Linux footprint in the enterprise that, say, Red Hat does. But I know a lot of people who enjoy working with it, because they know they can take a lot of the skills and lessons they learn with Ubuntu and apply them to Red Hat. You know, there is a level at which Linux is Linux, and just having the feel of the commands under your fingers helps you understand what's going on. And it seems to me that whole notion of the technology transfer, you know, staying current in one area, because even if your company isn't big into smart cars, for example, the technology that you study, the technology that you have to learn in order to keep up with smart cars, does end up applying to the technology that you're going to be using in the corporate environment.
That is really a good assessment of things, Kurt. Right now we're seeing worlds colliding in a lot of different places, and so paying attention to what's going on in consumer devices or in smart cars does actually have a lot of relevance to everyone's role in the enterprise as well. And we're going to see that even more as we start to see more and more connected devices in the Internet of Things or Internet of Everything ecosystem. So it's going to be exciting times.
Well, exciting times means we're certainly going to have a lot of excitement here at Information Week. As you look forward, do you have any sense of what you're going to have your minions working on for the next next few days on the site?
Well, we are going to be celebrating President's Day with some content from Dave, so I won't steal his thunder there. We also have more on the job front with 15 hot IT jobs for the year to help people think about their careers as well as where the talent might be headed. And we're going to be looking at some things outside of our world that are fascinating. We've got a report on some DARPA projects that we think every techie will love reading about as well.
Well, Susan, I know that in addition to writing Herd over what happens at Information Week, you do an awful lot of publishing on the various social media. If people want to keep up with you on social media, how do they do that? Where should they look for your words of wisdom 140 characters at a time?
My Tweety pipes are at Susan Nunziata and Nunziata at iWeek, or IW, sorry. So it's Nunziata, A-T-I-W. And those are two places that you can find me on Twitter. I'm, of course, on LinkedIn under my name, my regular name. And I am a terrible user of Google Plus, so you can look for me there, but you probably won't find me. So visit the Tweety Pipes if you want to connect.
Absolutely. And for those who want to hear more of some of the things that Susan's doing, she's going to be a guest on Interop Radio this coming Tuesday at 3 p.m. She's going to be one of she is one of the track chairs for the conference at the upcoming Interop. And we're looking forward to talking with you, Susan, about the kinds of speakers and topics that that you're going to be bringing to everyone there in Las Vegas.
Very good. I look forward to sharing that with everyone on Tuesday.
All right, Susan, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Kurt.
That was Susan Nunziata, editorial director here at InformationWeek.com. She is someone who you really should follow. She does, in fact, keep her finger on the pulse of all kinds of things and brings some really brilliant insight into a bunch of topics. Now, we mentioned in that last segment her role as a track chair at Interop, and I want to mention again that Interop is the face-to-face component of the community here at Information Week. Interop Las Vegas, connecting the IT community, will come to you April 27th through May 1st, 2015, at the stunning Mandalay Bay Convention Center in beautiful, scenic Las Vegas, Nevada. There are tons of conference sessions going on. I know that I'm working with the InteropNet and SDN Lab. If you have never seen those two networks, you owe it to yourself to be in Las Vegas to talk to the people who put those together. Gain insight into what's going on at the very high end of networking and what's going to be coming up in the future for networks for all sizes, shapes, configurations of companies and enterprises. For more information on Interop and to register, please go to www.interop.com. Well, it's time to turn our attention from Interop and from Information Week as a whole to one piece of the puzzle, but it's a big piece. We have a correspondent, an editor, who is rapidly building a reputation as one of the top observers of one of the biggest companies NIT. That company is Microsoft, and the editor is Kelly Sheridan. Kelly, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi there, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
So, Kelly, I actually got to walk by your desk, see the nerve center of your coverage of Microsoft, and I was just blown away with how focused you are on everything having to do with this enterprise software. So tell us, what's been going on in the areas that you're covering in the last week or so?
Well, we started off the week a little bit slow. Actually, Microsoft did release an essential security update this past Tuesday on Patch Tuesday. It addresses a vulnerability that endangers businesses that are using its Active Directory. But we really saw a lot of news later in the week, starting early yesterday. On Wednesday, Microsoft actually confirmed that it had acquired Sunrise, which is a calendar app. It's an interesting purchase, especially given that Microsoft just revamped its Outlook offering for iOS and Android. So this sort of urges the question, well, are they going to do more to it in the future? But right now, Microsoft has said that they're going to keep the app as is in the store after the transaction is finalized, and then I guess we'll see what they'll do with it in coming months. But we got a lot of news yesterday. There are rumors flying that Microsoft is in talks to acquire another company, Entrig, the company that produces the digital pen that accompanies its Surface Pro 3. Now, the companies have been working together for a few years, and Entrig recently hit some financial hard times. So Microsoft is reportedly acquiring it for $200 million, and I'm guessing that means that they will continue using their digital pens for the Surface Pro 3. And that seems to be an area that they're really tightening their focus on. I read a few reports saying that officials at Microsoft are determined to make the tablet digital pen combination function so closely to a traditional paper and pen that people won't prioritize one over the other, or lean to digital more so than traditional materials. But I'm apprehensive about that, but we will see what happens. They're obviously coming out with a lot of innovations over the next few months.
Well, it seems to me when you talk about all of these different areas, and having listened to our conversations for the past few weeks, it seems that Microsoft is making acquisitions and coming out with new products across a broad range of different product categories. It would seem to me that it would be easy to say that it's a real scattershot approach. But when you look at what they've been doing, do you see any pattern? Do you see any kind of broad strategy that underlines or underlies all of these things that they're doing?
It seems that they're really tightening their focus on mobile specifically. Over the last few months, I think Sunrise would be the sixth acquisition they've made since November 2014. And that is a mobile-focused acquisition. Microsoft also recently purchased Acompli, which is an email-based app. And shortly after they acquired that, they relaunched their entire Outlook platform to better accommodate mobile users. So Sunrise and Acompli are both mobile-focused. And then a while back, they acquired Haki App, which is a platform geared towards app development. So that could also enhance their mobile offerings. It also very closely aligns with Satya Nadella's idea of mobile first, cloud first. So it seems that they're doing a lot on the mobile front. And we'll see what more comes of these acquisitions in coming months.
Well, you know, we've just gotten past the one-year anniversary of Satya Nadella, you know, taking the reins at Microsoft. And in the grand scheme of things, a year is not a long time to really move a company as big as Microsoft. But from what you see, is it fair to say that Microsoft has become such an Adela's company? Or do you think that it's still in the process of evolving towards his vision?
I would say it is still, obviously he's still new to the role, and a lot of the products that have come out were not started under his leadership. Obviously those were started before he got there. But I think he's really taken charge, and he's trying to make Microsoft more appealing to consumers, more appealing to businesses. He's really trying to catch up with the latest in technology and steer the company in a direction that will attract more people to it. So he's really implementing his own strategy, but everything that was recently released in Windows 10, obviously that took far more than a year to put together. So I'd say he's certainly entering with a splash and making the company his own, but you know, you're still seeing like the final stages of previous leadership phase out.
Well, we've talked about what you've been covering for the last week, and knowing that we do have President's Day coming up for the coming week, aside from figuring out how to relate past presidents to future Microsoft coverage, what do you have on your radar screen? Are there any things that we should be sure to be on the lookout for in the coming weeks from your viewpoint?
I am hoping to chat with some people who are using the first first mobile preview for the Windows 10 operating system. That was released late in the day yesterday. Microsoft released its first build for its new operating system on mobile phones, and right now it's only limited to a very small audience. There are only 6 different types of Windows phones that will be able to handle this build. And Microsoft has openly said that this is still very rough around the edges. There are still plenty of bugs, plenty of errors. But it also said that it has some new features to it. So I'd be really interested in seeing what people have to say about it so far. Is this something that shouldn't have been released until it was further developed, or is this something that looks like it has a lot of promise? So it'll be interesting to see what people have to say about that over the next few days as they test it out and see what's in there.
Well, Kelly, before we let you go, you mentioned hearing what people think about some of these new products and technologies. I didn't prep you on this question, so I'm sort of hitting you blindside, but what would you love to hear from InformationWeek.com readers about? What would you like for the community to be talking to you about in the coming weeks?
Well, given that the mobile preview just launched, I'd be really curious to hear what your priorities are for a mobile phone, whether it's productivity related or more personal related. What are some things that you really like in your Apple phone or in your Android phone, and how could Windows take that feedback and incorporate it into its next builds for Windows Phone? Maybe just in general, some things that you really value and have in your smartphone, and how can Windows use that information to improve its products. That would be interesting, I think.
Outstanding. Now, we know that people can communicate with you by commenting on your stories in Information Week, but on the social networks, how can people follow you and get in touch with you? Where can they have these discussions with you online?
I'm very active on Twitter. You can follow me at Kelly Sheridan. My name is on Information Week, so it's first name, last name, and the number 22. And my name is also on LinkedIn. I'm also trying to share more content on that. So I would say those two social outlets are definitely best to reach me.
Outstanding. Well, Kelly, thanks so much for being with us today, and we will look forward to having you on the show once again next week.
Thanks for having me. Already looking forward to it.
That was Kelly Sheridan, Associate Editor here at Information Week. And, you know, let me tell you, if you are interested in anything that Microsoft does, you really should go ahead and add Kelly's work to your RSS feed. Be sure to follow her on Twitter. I mentioned at the beginning of the segment that she is becoming one of those people who is known for having great insight into what Microsoft does. It's lovely to see someone come in and really own coverage for an area as she is doing. Do yourself a favor. Follow her on the social media. Be sure to look at her work on Information Week. Well, from Information Week, we're going to pivot to one of our sister publications. Darkreading.com is where you go if you have any interest at all in computer security. And these days, if you own a computer and you don't have any interest at all in computer security, well, then I'm not sure what to say about you. So to talk to us about computer security and network security and all of the things that go bump on the net, we have Sarah Peters. Sarah, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thank you, Kurt. I'm always happy to be here.
Well, you know, I've been asking every week for the past few weeks, and I'll do it again. Did anything happen in the world of security this week that did not have the word Sony attached?
Well, yes. I mean, the most recent big, messy breach, which was actually a carryover from last week, is the one at Anthem. So it's interesting for a variety of reasons, partly because so many pieces of information on individuals was breached, but also because of the way that Anthem responded, which was they went far beyond what they were legally obligated to do. And within 8 days of detecting that something was wrong, they notified all of their customers and the entire public and the media, and they had already started working with a forensics team and had reported it to law enforcement, which is, I think, really unprecedented. Usually companies go around trying to put off as far as they can the whole notification process, but Anthem seems to be taking this really seriously. They were behaving very responsibly, and that's gotten a lot of praise from people in the security industry. And what we're wondering is, will this really quick notification process also help the investigation process? Nobody seems to know the answer to that yet, but it's a question. So people are going to be watching the investigation process very closely to see if there's a correlation. Because if there is, that would be fabulous, because hopefully that would encourage everybody to be more upfront when they have security incidents like this. And then somewhat related to that, today there was the White House Cybersecurity Summit happening at Stanford University, and President Obama just finished his presentation there. He spoke to the audience and then also signed a new executive order on cybersecurity, which is very similar to a executive order that he pushed forward last year, just around this time. But it creates a little bit more clarity on what that first one was all about. And also the big message in it is information sharing. The government is now trying to encourage all the organizations out there to work together and to work with the government to share information on any threats coming their way. And they're also now trying to move towards an effort to reduce liability for those organizations that are more forthcoming about the breaches that they have. So it's not clear what that means right now, but it makes sense if they can do something to kind of make organizations less fearful about sharing everything it is that's going on. Hopefully that will help everybody be a little bit more secure. So that just ended, like I said, about a half an hour ago, and that kind of fills you in on the week.
Well, it sounds like this last thing, the executive order, is something that you and the folks at Dark Reading are probably going to be talking about in the coming weeks as people dissect what was there and try to figure out exactly what it means when it's applied to the real world. I did have a couple of questions, about the Anthem incident. As you pointed out, we first heard about that last week. And we talked about it a bit last week. Have we learned anything more about exactly what happened and how it happened, or is the investigation still going on and we don't really know any more details at this point?
I would say that there are lots of there's a lot of speculation still going out there about what might have happened. But there's still not a lot of definitive information yet. And the one thing that we know is that the data was not encrypted, and there was a lot of disgruntled people out there saying, why was it not encrypted? And that began the conversation of the fact a lot of the data that was compromised is not... it's not required that be encrypted under rules like the like HIPAA, even PCI. A lot of the regulations that organizations are so concerned about don't require encryption on data at rest. And then there's also the fact that even if you do encrypt everything, there is always a moment when it's decrypted, because if it wasn't decrypted, nobody would be able to use it. So there's been some, I had a conversation last week with somebody at Mandiant, and Mandiant is the group that is conducting the investigation. He did not share details. He didn't actually confirm whether or not the data was encrypted in the first place. But what he did say was, just because it's encrypted doesn't mean it can't be stolen. So that hints at something, but we don't really know the details of what that hints at yet. So as far as how the breach happened, it does appear that the attackers were able to obtain admin credentials. But how that exactly has happened, there seems to be some debate about that right now.
Well, you mentioned when you were talking about the encryption, the fact that the information that was stolen was not required by regulation to be encrypted. To your knowledge, has there been any suggestion that the way Anthem has responded to this, as you pointed out, the speed with which they disclosed that a breach had occurred, has there been any suggestion that was due to the regulations that they fall under, things like HIPAA, or is that something that's entirely separate from the way they're handling the incident?
I think it's separate, because all of the rules out there give you some time. You know, you're talking more about 60 days between the time that you confirmed a breach or the moment that you detected a breach. 8 days is absolutely nothing. It's like they, at that point, most organizations are still pondering whether or not they are ever going to need to disclose something. And the disclosure rules are all, they have a lot of conditions set on them. So sometimes it is a matter of how many records were compromised and what was in those records. It varies depending on what state you're in. So there are a lot of factors. Sometimes you do need to report it to the media. Sometimes you do need to report it to law enforcement, and other times you only need to notify your customer base. So what they did by going ahead and telling everybody under the sun within 8 days of when they detected suspicious activity, that means something was going awry, but it wasn't that they confirmed right at that moment that there had been a compromise of millions of records. It was just the noticing that something was up, and 8 days later to tell everybody, that's wild, and it's great. But it has, since it's so incredibly different than what any of the rules require, that's exactly why it's so bizarre and laudable, but definitely bizarre.
Well, it sounds like there's going to be more to come from all this, much like the earlier Sony breach. For folks like you who cover the security industry, it's going to be the gift that keeps on giving. And if we know anything about security, it's that this is not all we'll have to talk about in coming weeks. But as you look ahead for the next week or so, what sort of things do you have your eye on at Dark Reading? I know you've got an episode of Dark Reading Radio coming up on Wednesday, but aside from that, what's going on?
Well, you know, like you said, there's always something happening in security, and we generally never know what that thing is going to be, and it raises our eyebrows, and we think, wow, it couldn't have possibly gotten any worse, but it just did. But I would say you can expect some more follow-up on Anthem, more analysis on what this new executive order will, what effect it could have, what effect it might have, and what, you know, whether it's going to have any effect at all. And then we're always going to be looking at things with payment card data and how the new payment systems and payment methods could improve security, whether or not it's all just a bunch of hoopla or whether any of the solutions out there are actually going to help us. We're going to take another look at PCI because some of the rules in the latest version of PCI just became just went into effect, like they're going to be enforced now. We're also going to be looking at the relationship between the Chief Information Security Officer and other executives in the company. So sometimes that CIO and CISO relationship is a little weird, and sometimes the CMO relationship with anybody is a little it's a little tricky in IT these days. So, more to come, but those are some of the things we're looking at right now.
Outstanding. Well, Sarah, tell us real quickly how people can follow you and keep up with all that you're doing there at Dark Reading.
The easiest place to find me is, well, the easiest place to find me is at darkreading.com. The second easiest is on Twitter, which is just at Sarah Peters, no H in Sarah. And then also follow at Dark Reading, and from there you can also find our other wonderful editorial team. You should really follow Kelly Jackson Higgins and Tim Wilson and Marilyn Cohodes on Twitter as well. We're all there, and we will certainly be expanding into other social networks once we figure out what to put on Instagram other than, you know, pictures of what we ate that day and padlocks and binary code pictures and things like that. More to come.
Well, we will certainly look forward to it. Sarah, thanks so much for being with us this week.
Thanks, Kurt.
That was Sarah Peters, senior editor at darkreading.com. Dark Reading is the sister publication of Information Week. Dark Reading is where you go to just get the willies scared out of you about all things cybersecurity. And if you are charged with cybersecurity, it's one of the places you definitely want to go to keep up with what your peers are doing. Well, we've come to the final segment of today's program, and as always, we're going to be talking with Dave Wagner. Dave Wagner is executive editor here at Information Week. Dave is executive editor in charge of the community. And Dave, today we're going to be talking about that always cheerful topic, death. And What new and exciting have you found about death and the cyber age to talk with us about today?
Well, Kurt, after years and years, Facebook has finally admitted that its users die.
I'm shocked.
Yes, I don't think Mark Zuckerberg wanted to face it, but he finally has. To be more honest, or to be more exact, what Facebook has done is finally codified what you can do if one of your dear departed loved ones has moved on from this earth, what you can do with their site. And you have two options now. One is to permanently delete, which is nice because, as you know, Facebook does not enjoy the words permanently delete. And you may also set up a single person to act as a legacy holder, I think is their term, but I prefer executor, of your site, so that you may post a final tribute post and pictures, and you may maintain friend requests, though I'm often amused by that. I didn't like you enough while you were alive, but I'm going to like you when you're dead. Seems a little confusing to me. But basically run your site as a memorial site after you die, and those are the now official choices, though we know for quite some time people have unofficially been doing that with pages simply by figuring out the credentials of their loved ones. So now Facebook is making that an official option.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, and I was fascinated by this, and it brought back some memories, because I know that when my mom passed away, my mother had a Facebook page, and fortunately, I had helped her set it up, so I had all of her credentials. But figuring out how to go in and, if you will, gracefully deal with her Facebook presence was one of those interesting chores that had to be taken care of as part of, you know, I think what we'll euphemistically refer to as her final arrangements. And that seems to be a growing thing, as, you know, a Facebook page is, for more and more people, just one of those things that you're going to have.
Yes, even if it's not very active, even if your presence on Facebook when you were alive was not significant, you know many people who are, and particularly Facebook doesn't like to admit this, but their audience skews older. Baby boomers and older are still loving Facebook. So America's facing the death of the baby boomers en masse, and now so is Facebook. And it's very interesting. I doubt that they've had to deal with this on the scale they're going to have to deal with it in the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, I'm going to try to pretend that I'm not offended by what you just said, and I am going to note that, you know, not just Facebook, but really all of the social media. One of the things that occasionally I know that many of us have a LinkedIn account that we use for business purposes. And one of the things that LinkedIn will occasionally do is pop up the "You may also know these people" page. And in my case, at least two or three of the people who are consistently in the first probably 20 names that pop up, I happen to know, shuffled off this mortal coil some 2 or 3 years ago. But, you know, here LinkedIn is offering to let me connect with them and continue to share professional information with them. The metaphysics behind that are, I think, for someone else entirely to dissect.
Right. Well, it's definitely a real issue. You might remember in January, Facebook got in trouble when they did a year in remembrance video where it was supposed to be all happy things, and several people reported the death of loved ones put into these videos as though they were wonderful occurrences, and it's terrible how mourning comes back to haunt you when you're least expecting it. The same thing could come up in your Facebook news feed, because if in your in the upper right hand column of a Facebook page, you will see friends of friends making comments. If somebody doesn't deal with these people have passed and what should we do about it respectfully, it's going to get worse and worse. I referred to it in the article as a sort of walking dead Facebook newsfeed. And it's really terrible. And what's great about Facebook codifying it this way is that it will be able to limit that a little bit more. I think they probably learned a big lesson in January.
Well, it's one of those things. This is a much bigger issue than just the IT industry. I know I heard an NPR program out of New York earlier today where they were talking about this very thing. So this is an issue that is beyond the IT suite and is hitting society as a whole. We appreciate you being on top of this for us here at Information Week. Dave, looking forward, do you have any topics that involve living people coming up for the next week or so?
I don't know. A lot of what I'm going to do is about robots, so I don't know if that counts. no, we have next week I'm going to be doing some articles on good career news for IT folks. Wage pressures are building. Hopefully IT folks will soon be making some more money. We have some reports showing that might be true. I'm going to be doing some big data stuff while Doug is skiing that I think will be interesting. And as Susan mentioned before, we'll be doing some fun things to celebrate President's Day, though admittedly most of those presidents are dead.
I feel a theme coming on, Dave. We really need to work on that.
Right.
Well, Dave, we appreciate you being with us. And real quickly, we're about to run over time, but real quickly, how do people follow you? How do people keep up with all that you're doing out on the social networks?
Well, if you go to the Tweety Pipes, you can find me at GeekendDave.
At GeekendDave. Well, Dave, thanks so much for being with us. We hope that you have a great GeekEnd.
Thanks for having me, Kurt.
Well, it's that time again. You've spent another hour with us here at Information Week Live. We're glad that you have. Do want to remind you of just a few things. First is that we want you to think carefully about coming to see us. The face-to-face portion of the community that we're all part of is Interop Las Vegas. Interop Las Vegas, connecting the IT community, will happen April 27th through May 1st, 2015, at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's a place you need to be if you want to keep up with all of your peers here in the IT community and have a chance to meet all of the editors and many of the writers here at Information Week. We would love to see you there. For more information on Interop and to register, please go to www.interop.com. Now, next week, of course, on Friday, we will have Information Week Live once again at 3 p.m. Eastern. In addition, we've got two more radio shows here in the UBM Radio Network. On Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time at darkreading.com, we'll have how to get more involved in the IT security community, one of those things that a lot of people are interested in. And whether you've been involved in IT security for a long time or are just getting started, it's one of the tech areas where the community is both vital and vitally active. You really want to be part of it, and Wednesday's show will help walk you through what's involved in getting much more involved in that IT security community. That's at 1 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, February 18th. Now, at 3 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, February 17th, we'll have Interop Radio. That happens over at Blog Talk Radio. Search on us there. This week, we're going to have three of our conference track chairs there, Susan Nunziata, Tim Wilson, who is editor-in-chief at Dark Reading, and Andrew Conry Murray, who is in charge of the conference at Interop, will all be with us talking about the various topics that are going to be discussed, some of the speakers that they've got lined up, everything you want to know about the conference at Interop. We're going to cover on Tuesday. That's an Interop radio episode you will not want to miss. Once again, that happens at 3 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday, February 17th, over at blogtalkradio.com. Now, to keep up with all of our URLs, to keep up with all of our shows, you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. My handle there is at KG4GWA. You can also follow me on Instagram. I'm Kurt_Franklin. I'm on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Google+, basically on all the things that enable me to waste time and spend a bunch of time in a not wasteful way talking with members of the IT community. I hope you'll follow me at all those. Talk with me. Let me know what you think, because really, this radio show, as everything we do here at Information Week, is all about you, the IT community. Well, for everyone here, Information Week Live, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, have a good week. We'll see you next time.